share with you my story, would you share your dollar with me? Bad times are coming and I reap what I done sowed.
Hey, hey.
Well, let me tell you something, all that glitters ain't gold.
Hey, hey.
It's been a long old trouble, long old troublesome road, and I'm looking for somebody, come and help me carry this load. I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need.
Hey, hey.
Well, I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need.
Don't we all need dollars, dollars, dollars? Perfect theme song. I'm Terry Savage, sitting in today for John Williams. Looking forward to a great show on the Wintrust New Business Hour. And we'll have a chance later on in the show, I hope, to take some calls or texts from you. The number will be open shortly. It's 312-981-7200. But just hold off for a while because we have such an interesting money show coming up. I love it when I get a chance to sit in for John every once in a while. I don't know how he does it all day, every day. Our guest in the first half hour a little bit later will be Sheila Weinberg of truthinaccounting.org. Now, that's a national organization, nonprofit, that holds cities and states to tell the truth about their accounting and where they hide all the obligations they have. And it's going to be very interesting because Truth in Accounting just came out with a report on the city of Chicago and its finances and its debt. And it's a particularly provocative discussion today because just yesterday or the day before, the mayor put out her going forward plan for Chicago to bring the city back. And it's a long-term optimistic plan. That's good. Chicago is a city that makes no small plans. But the big question is, where will the money come from? Is it going to come from you, from me, from taxpayers? We'll ask Sheila Weinberg later on. And then in the second half hour, we're going to be joined by my friend Jack Avalon, founder of Crescent Asset Management. You probably heard his name for years and years in Chicago as the chief investment officer of BMO Harris. But 3 years ago, it's just a little over 3 years ago, he and a couple of really smart guys, including Doug Reed and Avi Stein, started a money management company, and they now have $9.5 billion under management. So we're going to be asking Jack's thoughts about the economy, the markets, and a little bit about the implications of potential political changes on things like tax rates and financial planning and your investments. But while I have a minute or so here before we go to our first break, let me start out with a couple of personal finance Terry's tips for you. Has anybody forgotten that your tax return is due on Wednesday? The 2019 return, yes, we're, of course, halfway through 2020, but, you know, we all got a pass. So if you haven't done it yet, get online, go to irs.gov. They'll give you free resources. You don't have to pay anybody to file it for you, but you must file by Wednesday. If, in fact, you can't get your return completed, you also can apply for an extension, but you have to pay all the taxes that are due. Now, how do you figure out what taxes are due? You have to sort of do your tax return. So no more procrastinating. Make sure you file for an extension or actually pay your taxes by Wednesday. So that messes up this weekend. Well, maybe we'll find out from Steve later. It's going to rain all weekend. Who knows? But it's like sort of like, you know, talking about Santa Claus in mid-July to talk about income taxes now. Two more Terry's tips. Don't forget, for those of you who file quarterly estimated taxes, you have to file two of those at once. The one that was due in April and the one that was due in June are all both now due in July. So for some people, that may mean a lot of money. Now, you're probably filing online, but I know that there are people who file by paper still. If you're going to mail your return, primarily because I've gotten so many calls about, where's my refund? I sent my paper return in March. That was just when the IRS sent all its people home, so I have this mental vision of stacks and stacks of envelopes waiting for them as they come back, but they came back and had to finish the stimulus. So make sure you get a certified return receipt requested on your on your mailing of your taxes so you can prove you did send the check and that you did send it on time. Okay. Oh, there's other big personal finances. You know how much we've talked about not getting your unemployment benefits and, more importantly, not even being able to get through to IDES, the Illinois Department of Employment Security? Well, finally, 4 months later, they just this week instituted a new callback system. That's to, do you think it took them 4 months to figure this out? You know that if you call online to the airlines or something like that, they'll say, or you can leave your number and you won't lose your place in line and we'll call you back. Okay, they just put that in at IDES. Your call will be returned in the order it was received. That's because their system has been swamped by so many of you telling me that they've you've dialed 1,000 times, a million times. So now when you call Illinois Department of Employment Security, you can leave your phone number. I fully expect in a couple of weeks to get calls saying, I left my phone number. Don't leave your phone number 100 times. Leave it once, maybe twice if you want to hedge your bets. But you, I hope we'll have a better chance of getting through to them. What else before we go to break? Oh, Orion gave a great take on the markets, but you know what? Let me just make a quick point about one market we don't talk very much about, and that's gold. Right at the moment, it's trading just a bit under $1,800 an ounce, but for the last couple of days, it's traded at $1,800 an ounce or slightly over. Now, this is not a sign of inflation. I guess we have no inflation in sight. Today's producer price index decrease proved that. So what is that? Maybe that's the fear of all this money we've created and that the Fed promises to create and is going into the market to buy all kinds of securities, including bond funds, with newly created money. Maybe that's just the early warning signal that gold is sending about the future value of the dollar. If you have questions, we could talk about that later. And then one more thing that everybody keeps asking about, and that is the next stimulus. There's all kinds of discussion now starting in Washington just before they leave again. Most Congress is on vacation till July 20th, whether they'll extend the unemployment benefits to $600. I think that's unlikely that it'll be $600, whether do another round of PPI or another stimulus check. That's all up in the air, but you know it's an election year, and Congress will act to buy your vote. So you can expect news coming out probably toward the end of the month when Congress gets back in town. I'm Terry Savage. That's your personal finance and money update, and we're ready to get started with the show. And I am Terry Savage, sitting in today for John Williams, looking forward to a fascinating next segment with Sheila Weinberg. Now, I know that many of you saw the mayor's proposal yesterday released. I woke up yesterday morning and saw Mayor Lori Lightfoot very impressively on CNBC talking about all the things that are going to happen in Chicago that she'd like to do to make Chicago the best city in America again, a destination again, a business hub again, and so forth. And, of course, Chicago is a city where we make no small plans. But the day before, on Wednesday, I woke up to a report from truthinaccounting.org. Full disclosure, I've been sort of an honorary board member for as long as I can remember. This organization is devoted to unveiling the quirks and the hidden things in municipalities and state finances all across the country. And their new report on Chicago just happened to come out. Sheila Weinberg, what was the headline in that report, founder of Truth in Accounting?
Well, the headline was that Chicago's finances worsened by $2 billion last year. And you know, so I don't know where they're going to get the money to pay for everything that the mayor is promising. The city is already in debt by $36 billion.
Well, Sheila, this is 2019 numbers. I mean,
this is before the shock of the pandemic. So, unfortunately, we anticipate that these will get even worse with the pandemic happening.
How do you reconcile this? I mean, is it just a PR stunt? What would you say?
Well, you know, the reason that Truth in Accounting even exists is because we just believe that citizens aren't being given the financial information they need to knowledgeably participate in their governments. The mayor and former mayors, Mayor Emanuel, continually told, implied that everything was fine, their budgets were balanced, they've not been forthcoming on the true finances of the city.
Where are these? I know you're the one person, because you're an accountant yourself, and you're dedicated to the numbers, but you always explain it in such good English. How do they get away with hiding and saying, and now we're not being political here. This is mayors going back a long way. How do they get away with saying the budget is balanced? What are the tricks they use?
Well, the largest trick that they use, and I'll equate it to a person, is it would, Terry, it'd be like me saying my budget is balanced, but I haven't paid the minimum on my credit cards. So the city, you know, they, quote, balance their budget by not paying the minimum on their pension credit cards. The promises that employees have earned, the right to...
I said, Pete, have we lost Sheila? We're trying to do this, of course, all remotely. This is a very interesting issue because if the place, we'll get Sheila back, if the place that hides the liabilities and allows us to go forward saying our budget is balanced is in the payments to, that are required to be put into the city's pension funds, which are woefully underfunded even after a 10-year bull market that ended in February. Now, what does that mean for our police, our fire, our sanitation workers? All right, so let's get Sheila back on. Sheila?
What I was saying is, you know, the city has promised employees benefits, but they're not putting enough money aside. Their actuaries said that they should pay the minimum of $4.2 billion in 2019. They only paid $2.8 billion, but they said their budget was balanced.
Okay, now let me just stop you right there because while you were off, I said, this is pretty critical. If you are a city employee, whether it's sanitation or you're a police or fire or anybody else depending on a city-funded pension, when will those chickens come home to roost? How long can they play this game?
Well, right now they only have 18 cents set aside for every dollar of police and fire benefits that have been promised. And I think, I don't have the number exactly in my head, but it's very soon, within the next 5 years, that one of those plans is just going to run out of money, and then the city will have to do a pay-as-you-go plan, and hopefully that they'll have enough revenue to pay the benefits that have been promised.
So we're talking about within the next decade.
Oh,
now, we're not talking about suddenly they stop paying benefits, because, of course, those still working pay in, and the city will have revenues, of course, to pay in out of their general tax revenues. But we're talking about the fact that we could be facing these decisions about how to pay full benefits or whether could it be possible benefits get what they call in the business a haircut, that you don't get all the benefits that you were promised?
Unlike a private pension plan, they can't change the benefits of people who are currently working. The Illinois Supreme Court has said, nope, you're stuck with what you promised, and the people who are retired who have already earned those benefits can't change those. And it's so bad. It's such a bad situation that when any time somebody starts working, they can't change their benefits going forward. So they're just stuck with these benefits, and hopefully there will be enough tax revenue to, you know, or
okay,
they'll have to make other cuts or, you know, in services or benefits to make these happen.
Now, the question of borrowing comes back. It's really interesting. In January, the city, just before the pandemic, borrowed about $1.5 billion, and actually the people were so hungry for yield back in January, they didn't worry about risk. So the city did refinance, and then again, almost $750 million in March. But there's a limit to how much we can borrow or at what rates it will cost us.
Yeah, the more you borrow, the higher interest the rates get, and the harder it is to borrow in the future. Hopefully, when we really, really need the money, people will still be lending the money to the city.
Okay, so the next question is, so is there anything the city can do now that you would say, first of all, that should they be revealing this, or would that cause enough of a panic that nobody would want to be here in the city?
Well, fortunately, you know, our report's based on the city's audited financial statements, so the numbers are out there, but I think the city needs to be more forthright. They need to, I always say, be very careful when they say they balance their budget, because they really don't, and I really, wonder why reporters don't sort of say, well, you're balancing your budget, but Are you paying all your pension contributions? Are you funding all your bills?
Anything other place that it's hidden except in failure to make those pension contributions?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Is there anything other way they hide their losses or their budget deficit besides the pensions?
Well, I'm sure this year that they'll be like the state of Illinois, that they will borrow money and they'll, in essence, record that as revenues. That's another great trick that they do. Or there will just be, invoices that, people will, charge the city their invoices, but they just won't pay them. But they'll even though those costs are current year costs, they'll pretend that those are future costs.
I'm sure that if you and Lori Lightfoot were on a panel together, would she be forced to acknowledge this? I'm setting that up, but I think it would be fascinating because part of it is public relations, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. And, fortunately, we worked for years at Truth in Accounting to get city and state financial statements correct. So they have to put their pension and retiree health care liabilities on their balance sheets. So we can just point to those and say your own balance sheets shows that you're in a bad financial situation.
Can I give some advice at this point? Tell me if you would agree to anybody working for the city. They'll figure something out. They always do. But please save more in your private accounts, whether you can have an IRA because of some other income or whether you just set money aside after taxes, because this is coming to a head, as you say, Sheila, in the next decade for sure?
Yep, in the next decade. And, unfortunately, each taxpayer's share of that, of the city's debt is now $39,400, and that's money that, they're going to come to the taxpayers to try to pay this debt or cut services, or as I think it's very good that you're mentioning to these future pensioners and current ones that they need to save for themselves.
Terrific. That is Sheila Weinberg. The website is truthinaccounting.org. It has a great national debt clock, and there you can read the latest report on the fiscal health of the city of Chicago. I'm Terry Savage, sitting in today for John Williams, and I'm going to toss to the news with Steve Bertrand and come back with a fascinating talk about the stock market. And welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Terry Savage, sitting in today for John Williams. And I am delighted to welcome a guest to the show who is just such an incredible success story, Jack Ablin of Crescent Asset Management. And he and two partners founded this management company about 3 years ago. Jack, tell me again, it rocked my feet, that you have $9.5 billion under management already in 3 years?
Yeah, it's remarkable. We did make a couple of acquisitions, but that really only accounts for, I'm going to say, $2 billion of it. $7.5 billion organic growth. It's a remarkable story.
And as a business story first, what is it that's attracted everybody to you today?
Yeah, I think that, keep in mind that the partners were all pretty well established in our field. We didn't have to leave our firms, but we had an idea that we wanted to build a personal investment platform for the 21st century. I was an executive vice president at BMO Harris for 17 years, and I latched onto an idea called goals-based investing, and I think combined with that and opportunities in private investments, built an offering that's compelling.
Everybody's going to say, I can hear it right now, so I'm going to interrupt you. How much money do you have to get in to crush it?
We do have relatively low minimums. I'm going to say, probably a $2 million $2.5 million minimum.
I heard a collective buyout.
We're able to gain access to some of these strategies and chop them up because we're the ones actually originating them, so we don't have to go through middlemen.
I got you. So are you creating funds or just asset allocation strategies for these accounts that are all along similar lines?
Sure. So really our main job is to build what I'll call a defined benefit program for our clients. Tell us what you need to make manage, you know, maintain your lifestyle, and we'll set aside assets that will deliver you a paycheck every 2 weeks for as long as you need it. And then if there's money left over, we can invest in, you know, higher risk, higher return strategies that don't, you know, necessarily your lifestyle doesn't rely on those strategies to, you know, to succeed in order to, you know, continue to make your paychecks.
All right. Now, I want to ask you about the markets, but first I want to go back to that. Everybody, doesn't matter if you have $1 or $2 million minimum or whatever, everybody who's reaching retirement age would love to have a strategy that said you're going to have enough money every month till you retire. What, you know, and everybody goes, well, that's so uncertain. Yeah, I could put it all in an immediate annuity today and get the same check a month for life, but then what if inflation returns, and what if I needed a hunk of cash? I can't put it all in there, because once it's in there for an immediate annuity. How do you get this? Tell me what it is you know about the markets or the investments that can give people this kind of certainty, although I suppose with $2 million you should probably be able to live the rest of your life.
Sure. So you're right. I mean, it's all about trade-offs, Terry. So, for example, you know, if you told me you needed, you know, $60,000 a year growing at inflation for the next 40 years, one, you know, we could certainly say, well, if you take all of that and add it up and put it in a government money market fund, you know, you can have 100% certainty that that money will be there. But then we you know, have a trade-off. We say, well, look, you don't want to have to dedicate a ton of money into low-returning assets in order to achieve 100% chance. What if you're willing to accept a 95% chance? Or what if you're willing to accept a 90% chance? And so what we do is we can run different scenarios and outcomes that can offer our clients, depending on how much they want to commit to their lifetime capital, that you know, we can offer those trade-offs, and then it allows them to free up other money to do a lot of what we call aspirational things.
That is the expertise of professional money management. Okay, everybody's got a tongue hanging out going, yeah, I want to do that. We'll come back to that at some other point, because you need to have a lot of money to start. But knowing you're doing that with $9.5 billion, I want to ask you what you think about the stock market right now. In general, I mean, there's a big argument. The market is overpriced. This, you know, we'll never have earnings again. The economy isn't really opening, and now it's a bigger chance that it won't reopen, and so, or the things won't come back. What do you think about the markets right now in general?
You know, Terry, I can't argue with those arguments. Those are legitimate issues. If you look at the S&P 500, relative to its 20-year history, it's trading in the top quintile of its historical range in terms of valuation. Other markets, the small caps, in the second quintile of its highest quintile of its historical range. When you start moving international, it gets to be a little more reasonable. In fact, international large caps more in the the cheaper end of the range. But you're right, you know, when you've got a scenario here that equities are largely pumped up by stimulus and not earnings, to me, that's not a real sustainable growth strategy.
All right. So when you say that, we have a lot of people in our audience. I mean, some are speculators and younger investors. I've always advised over the long run being at least 20 years, that you must bet on America. But in the shorter run, as many people are approaching retirement where they won't get to continue that $300 a month on the 401k plan, how conservative does that make you then? And where in the stock market are there still opportunities? Or you've always been kind of an index-based guy and a market direction guy.
Yeah, that's funny. I would say, you know, back in my BMO days, in the early 2000s, I was the largest holder of exchange-traded funds in the country. I think we had $20 billion of exchange-traded funds. So you're right. I was an early adopter of passive strategies, low-cost ways of gaining access to the market. And in March of this year, I made a 180-degree turn and said, look, indexing is not going to be the way to navigate COVID. If you look at two companies that were in the same industry, Netflix and Disney, before COVID, they were, you know, neck and neck competitors. COVID drove a wedge between those two companies, right? With Netflix on one side and Disney and their theme parks on the other. And an index isn't going to be able to go in and change that allocation quickly. So we did switch to active management in March, and we continue to recommend active management to help navigate these uncertain times.
What does that mean? You're picking stocks or groups? You know, today, for example, the market rebounded because of an early report about one drug that you take in the hospital that keeps you from dying, but that's not such a, you know, solution to the problem. But now you've got Carnival Cruise Lines up today. Is it this question of trading what's in and what's out, what's recovery and what's not recovery on a daily basis, or do you have a better way to pick stocks?
Sure. So, yeah, for us, there's really we want to just be able to provide as much certainty to uncertain markets as possible. And for us, it's really two key themes. One is focus on sectors and industries that are somewhat insulated from the vagaries of the COVID uncertainty. So, you know, I would prefer things like healthcare and tech stocks over, let's say, retail and travel stocks. Eventually, you know, when this whole thing's behind us and the survivors make it through, those retail and travel stocks will certainly rally back aggressively. But it's not a game plan that I want to play. So we did build a custom equity portfolio for our clients in March that was concentrated on the highest quality companies in the S&P 500 that also had business models that were somewhat insulated from the uncertainty.
All right, now let me stop you there because there's one big uncertainty, and we only have about a minute or so left, and that's political, and it's starting to not only creep in but gallop into the market as the polls change. We're not being political here, but the chances of both the Democrats controlling the Senate and the presidency have increased in recent weeks. See what happens. But that brings in a whole different environment for taxes and for financial planning. Your thoughts on that?
Sure. Well, first of all, let me just just dispel one misconception, and that is taxes are going to go up, whether the Republicans are in charge or the Democrats are in charge. Maybe if the Democrats are in charge, it will be faster, but eventually the Republicans are going to have to raise taxes too or cut spending. But my guess is they're going to have to do a combination of the two, just based on, you know, the amount of debt we're piling up and the deficit levels that we're accumulating. You know, right now we're fighting a fire. We don't care about the upholstery. Eventually we will. And those taxes, and so we are taking steps with our clients to do things like convert to a Roth IRA, to accelerate capital gains, to revisit your estate plan, perhaps shift money to future generations sooner to try to get around these things. But you're right. The Democrat control of the White House and Senate, I think, will start to impact markets, at least historically, in August. And, you know, that's another headwind.
Never a boring day. Jack, thank you so much for joining us. Jack Ablin of Crescent Capital, $9.5 billion under money management. And I hope to talk to you again on this show soon. Thanks very much, Jack.
Thanks, Terry.
Everybody else, don't go away. I'm Terry Savage, sitting in for John Williams. Let's open the phone lines now. Pete, can you handle that? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And when we come back, let me take a stab at answering your questions long distance. Let's right now, first though, go to the Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. An MIT study says superstar cities like Chicago aren't all they're cracked up to be when it comes to careers, especially for black male college students. The study says they're good spots for people in high-paying professions like banking, but no longer good for people in middle-paying jobs. Cookware and kitchen chain Sur La Table is closing 56 of its 126 stores. It's seeking bankruptcy protection. There are six in the Chicago area. Stores at Oakbrook Center, Northbrook Court, and the Arboretum of South Barrington all are slated to be shut down. And a Chicago startup has created a tool for lawyers to communicate during the jury selection process. Chicago Inno says JuroSearch can help lawyers organize jury pools, rank jurors to help them decide who to kick out and who to keep, and also add comments about specific jurors along the way. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 248 points so far today. The NASDAQ and S&P 500 each up 19. With a look at the day's agribusiness headlines, here's Orion Samuelson.
The wheat market continues to be a pretty active market, about the only one in the agricultural community. But right now, the July wheat contract is up 16¾ cents, trading at $5.43 a bushel. The July corn contract, on the other hand, is down 8½ cents, trading at $3.42¾. And the July soybean contract down 8½ cents as well, and it's trading at $8.87¾ a bushel. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, we find the August lean hog contract down 47 cents a hundredweight. The August live cattle contract, on the other hand, is up 70 cents a hundredweight, trading at $99.95. And the August feeder cattle contract is trading at $135.85 a hundredweight. Well, the news came yesterday from the American Farm Bureau Federation in Washington. Federation President Zippy Duval tested positive for COVID-19, and he declined an invitation to attend a dinner at the White House this week with Mexico's president, according to his spokeswoman, Terry Moore, who said Duval is quarantined at his farm in Georgia and is, quote, feeling strong and in good spirits. He traveled only once within Georgia on an official capacity to events in the past 2 weeks, adding that the hosts of the events and others he had come in contact with were being notified. The COVID-19 situation in meatpacking plants, still pretty much there, but we're not talking about it quite as much. But the COVID-19 outbreaks among meat and poultry processing facility workers can rapidly affect large numbers of people, according to a report of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The animal processing industry employs an estimated 525,000 workers in about 3,500 facilities across the United States. And while it's not getting the attention that it did about a month ago, it's still actively involved in the workers' population in those plants. But at least our food chain is still solid. That's your money on 720 WGN.
And welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Terry Savage, sitting in today for John Williams. I love to get a chance to do this once in a while. Our phone lines are open, 312-981-7200. In the last few minutes, I'm going to try and answer as many questions as I can. But if not, go to terrysavage.com and post your question. I'll be spending the entire weekend trying to get through them all, but it's a labor of love. All right, let's start with the phone line. I guess on line one is Dave. Dave, what's your question?
Hi, Terry. My wife was unemployed for about 3 months, and she did actually get her unemployment, but from the point she received her letter, we believe the calculation was incorrect. So we filed the paperwork 3 months ago. I can never call and get through. And my question really gets down to if she makes $40,000 a year, let's say, but she's only paid $30,000 because of health care costs and stuff, should her unemployment be based off the $40,000 or the $30,000?
Oh, that's a great question. And I'm not quite sure. I can take a quick look, but we don't probably have enough time. But I would assume that it is off the gross salary, but I'm before taxes, and I think before deductions. that the unemployment is based. But it's a great question. If you post it at terrysavage.com, I will give you a really good answer. You said she hasn't been paid enough just because you think they took her calculations off the net and not off the gross?
Well, yeah, we looked at it, and the letter that they gave, it completely ignores the, you know, medical costs, the HSA costs, all the things that are pre-tax, which are listed on her W-2, but they're not listed on the individual statements, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense to me, and I don't want to give you the wrong answer. Do me a favor. If you post it at terrysavage.com, I will give you the correct answer. And whenever anyone posts a question and I answer it, an automatic email goes off that says your question has been answered. Thanks for calling, Dave. It's a good question. I don't know the specifics of that. Okay? But by the way, now, you know, IDES just posted a callback system where if you call them, leave your name and phone number, and in the order in which your call was received, you'll be called back. So, but I have a way in the back door to ask those technical questions, so I'll do that for you. All right, on line two, we have Bob. What's your question?
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Terry. The reason I'm calling is that over in 2005, I invested $30,000. I have 16-year-old twin boys in the College of Illinois prepaid tuition program. Every year I see something about it, and I do get a statement every year, but is it solvent? Because now my kids are 2 years away from college, and
I get the feeling.
I never hear good things.
I get the feeling. I'm not sure, but I think that they have still suspended the College Illinois prepaid tuition program from new investors in it. However, you don't care in a way. It depends on how you define the term solvent. Solvent is, will they grant you the 4 years? Did you buy 4 years of full tuition for both kids?
No, 2 years each. And then I have a 529 that I started afterwards.
Will they stand behind it? I think that would be, it's not a general obligation of the state of Illinois. We've learned that. However, I think that would devastate Illinois, the worst bond rating of any state in the country, the worst, and it is just above junk status. And I think that the governor and the legislators know that if they defaulted on that prepaid tuition plan, it would be like a bomb going off in the world of finance, and that would send them into junk status and cost the state more than merely giving you a voucher for the 2 years of tuition for each of your kids. So I would not stay up late worrying about it, because I think that they will just say, yep, you get 2 years, University of Illinois or wherever your child chooses to go.
Well,
it would be just a disaster if that didn't happen. Okay?
All right, appreciate it.
Sure, okay. Let's move on to the next call. Pete, our producer, says Barb is on the line.
Hi, Terry. Thank you for taking my call. I'm in a little bit of a dilemma that I'm not sure what to do. I am a nurse at a Chicago area hospital. I'm keeping it private. I'm going to say it was like a relaxation unit. So they closed down in early April because of COVID, but we've been deployed all over the hospital working like absolute dogs, taking care of the sickest of the sick for the past 3 months. Now we suddenly got this bombshell that they no longer need us to help with the COVID patients, but they're also not going to open our, I'm just going to call it like a relaxation unit.
All right, so, Barb, let me tell you something. We are just about up at the end of the show, and I really hate to leave your question hanging, but the powers that be are signaling me that I have to end this. So I'm going to say to you and everyone else, terrysavage.com, there's a button there that says Ask Terry. I will be working all weekend and eventually get to your question. I love you all for calling in and for being so interested, and I thank John for letting me sit in when he's gone. Thank you all.